Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the podcast Nourishing Life, One Bite at a Time. For those who are new to our podcast, my name is Allison from Google, an AI kitchen assistant platform. And together with me here is Brammy from StellarEat, a platform for special dietary eaters. Our podcasts are about the relationship between food, health, lifestyle, and everything in between. In today's podcast, we have Adam from Branching Park Farm here to share his story about farming and the story to lead him to the organic farm. Adam, welcome to the podcast. Let's start with the basic. Tell us, who are you, what you do, and what inspired you to start Branching Park Farm?
Hi, thanks for having me on. My name is Adam Mohammed. My wife, Mika Bampusikum, and I are the owners and operators of Branching Path Farm. We've been operating since 2017. This was our eighth growing season. I'm born and raised in Toronto. I got really interested in environmental and kind of social justice issues as a teenager, and thought a lot about different problems in the world, and decided to kind of devote to try and build a career that was kind of trying to help things, not just making money to get by, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, at some point I started, kind of after high school and during university years, I started gardening, I spent some summers traveling around, working on different organic farms, just to see if it was a right fit for me. And I really enjoyed it, the work, the lifestyle, and I met my now wife, Nika, on a farm. So from when we met, we had kind of the shared dream to either be farming as a business or at least kind of homesteading, living out in the country with a big garden, trying to grow as much of our own food as possible. And it's worked out that at the moment we're able to farm for our income.
All right. Thank you for that, Adam. Thank you for sharing your beautiful story and what really inspired you to continue building Branching Path Farm to what it is now. What we found out in our research is that you started with 8,000 square foot plot.
Yeah.
And today you've able to thrive it to 3 acres of this beautiful crops that you always have at the farmer's market. Can you walk us through in the earliest days, the milestones that what helped you gone through that process? Because I know a lot of people would be thinking like, oh, how could I achieve such milestone starting something small? And what people don't realize is, you know, starting with what you have sometimes is the best forward. So maybe give us some insight on that one.
Biggest hurdle to getting into farming is access to land, of course. Unless you have a lucrative career already or inherited a bunch of money, farmland is pretty expensive. So what happened was my wife and I, after working for other farmers, we ended up back in the city for a few years, wondering how we would get access to land. And then there's a farm outside Hamilton called Simpler Time Organic Farm that we used to work for. And they were scaling back. They're semi-retired. So what happened was in 2016, they told us, hey, next year we're looking for people who want to use part of the property. Are you guys interested? And that wasn't just using the land, but also infrastructure, things like irrigation and kind of infrastructure for washing and storing the vegetables. So that's how we started. 8,000 square feet, that's about a fifth of an acre. It's pretty small by farm standards, but it's much bigger than most people's home gardens.
Yeah.
That first year, we bought a pickup truck and some seeds and a few tools, and used also the rototiller at Simpler Time to kind of prep the ground, and bought a truckload of compost. That first year, we just grew a variety of crops and came to the Ottawa Street Market with them. And one kind of reference point for 8,000 square feet, a head of lettuce takes about a square foot of space. If you picture 8,000 heads of lettuce, you need some pathways in there.
Yeah.
Not just lettuce, a variety of different crops. And then many crops grow quite quickly, so you can grow two or three crops in a year off the same ground, be it lettuce or bok choy or carrots or things like that. That first year we did that, you know, fifth of an acre. The second year we scaled up to a half acre. And the third year we scaled up to two thirds of an acre. In that kind of second and third year, so talking 2018, 2019, we were keeping our eyes open for the cost of farmland. And we kept seeing all these properties that were described as hobby farms, about you know, 3 acres, 5 acres, that sort of thing, that seemed quite affordable. We were doing the math on it and we realized, hey, we could pay for a property that size, not right by the city, but having to go a bit further out. But we could pay for it by growing kind of high value vegetables on it. In early 2019, we went and approached Farm Credit Canada, which is a crown corporation by the Canadian government that gives mortgages and loans to farmers. And we simply approached them and asked, do you work with small farms like us? We kind of assumed they didn't. We assumed they would only work with big industrial scale farms. But they said, yeah, we do work with small farms. You just need to present us a business plan to show that you could support the payments, the mortgage payments. And so that's what we did. We came up with a business plan, you know, describing what we were doing and how we could grow, and came up with a realistic spreadsheet projecting the growth of the business. We presented that to them, and long story short, they said, okay, this looks good. Are you looking at any properties? Even though we didn't have a pre-approval, we had gone and looked at a couple of small properties in Norfolk County, where we ended up now, and nearby Haldimand County and Brant County. And the place that we have now that we've been on for 5 years was one of those that we saw online. Yeah, they gave us a mortgage for this property specifically, because the house is a duplex. So there was some potential for rental income from tenants. So that was July, August 2019 that we put in an offer and got inspections and that sort of thing, and took possession in October 2019. Enough time to prep the ground a little bit, put up a greenhouse, and plant our first crop of garlic, which is planted in the fall in our garden.
Yeah, I love that, because I think we are kind of sold on the big idea or the vision of what it's going to look like. But based on your story, you start something small and able to scale it up by your operations very strategically. And then I think one good piece about it is that people that are looking into farming or starting with a hobby farm is to look into people that are going retiring. Yeah. I think there's a lot of farmers out there. I've heard that there are farms that actually just shut down because no one is taking over their land from their families. So I guess it's for our listeners out there, that's a really good, you know, story that Adam had told us.
Yeah.
Go look for retiring couples that have done already enough in their life and no one's taking over. And of course, take a leap at going to crown corporations that do support local farms, because you wouldn't know any difference if you don't ask. Really, thank you for walking us through very generously, because that gives, you know, everyone that's listening right now that accessibility to land is possible.
I'm curious, in the world of convenient for a for the city person, because you're from Toronto, right? What makes organic and sustainable farming so important to you, and why do you think it matters for the Canadians as well?
Well, I would say big picture, every human person and civilization has to have sustainable agriculture, because the word sustainable meaning it has to be able to be sustained long term. I mean, if you look at history, there's stories of civilizations that collapsed because they didn't do agriculture sustainably. They degraded the soil. They did different things to basically cause, after centuries, causing their farm systems to collapse. So I think it's important overall for all people to want agriculture to be sustainable.
Yeah.
As far as organic, I mean, you know, there's some science out there and then there's some pseudoscience, but I think overall it's, you know, I want to eat clean. Lots of people want to eat clean. Lots of different pesticides out there can cause a lot of health issues and a lot of environmental issues, but they're still coming to me to buy carrots and cabbage and some vegetables that they can't grow enough of in the garden. Also, we sell plants too. So in the spring, they're buying their seedlings from us and then growing them.
Sustainable produce, but I'm trying to eat like seasonally, and it's easier for me to do that in spring and in during summer. But in the colder months, like we are in the winter months now, it's hard for me to find the organic produce. Do you have any suggestion for like the customer like me to maintain our healthy eating habit in the winter?
One thing I would say is kind of adjusting what you eat based on the season. In traditional seasonal eating, if you go back 100 or 200 years ago, people wouldn't expect to eat like fresh tomatoes or peppers or salad in the winter. Winter is when you'd have cabbage and carrots and potatoes and make soups and stews and stuff like that. And
yeah,
spring and summer is kind of the time for salads and other crops like tomatoes and cucumbers and zucchini and stuff like that. One thing I'll say too is, I mean, there are some organic farms that do operate quite large greenhouses through the winter. I'm not one of those farmers, but you know, you can find some of these crops in the winter at certain stores or supermarkets. Also, there are some farms that do, like, we used to do a home delivery CSA, but we don't anymore. But like, there is a farm called Plan B Organic Farm. They do a veggie box that continues through the winter, which includes some greenhouse products, things like lettuce and cucumbers and tomatoes. So that's one way to go to.
Thank you.
Thank you for mentioning the CSA bag box, because you have been also a champion for that. I'm curious what's typically in a CSA box for people that also during winter, like what Allison said, she still want to be able to do that. Is that available all year round? And if the boxes that goes to our house weekly, or it depends on like what subscription you have, is it dependent on what you pick or whatever is the harvest?
It really depends. There's different farms will do different things. There are also companies that do something like a CSA box, but they're just a company that's like a middleman, a distributor.
Okay, gotcha.
The way that we ran ours was 20 weeks through the summer, kind of June to October. And we tried to have the box pretty well balanced, so it wouldn't be like all leafy greens or all root vegetables, or, you know, we would try to give people a balance of stuff. Say a week in June might be, you know, lettuce and spinach and radishes and peas and whatever was in season. And then in the summer, it would have still some greens, but getting into things like carrots and beets, you know, tomatoes, zucchini, things like that. In the fall, it would be a bit heavier on the root vegetables and things like squash and garlic. The way we did ours too, there would be kind of a standard box, but with some customization. So if someone, for example, if they had a food sensitivity to nightshades and they didn't want eggplant or peppers, or if they really didn't like mustard greens or bok choy, they could swap it out for something more simple like lettuce. Some CSAs will just have a standard box. You get what you get. Other CSAs have a much more customizable, but then you lose the convenience if every week you have to go online to select what's in your box. And then, of course, some of the companies that are not just a farm, but are like a distributor. I know one, they're called Mama Earth Organics. I don't actually know how they do it, but yeah, some companies, they probably have a much more customizable box. And then, yeah, in the winter, you know, assume it's going to be more root vegetables and squash, maybe some greenhouse products, maybe hydroponic lettuce or microgreens or something like that.
That's really good to know. I think for having a standard CSA boxes, but being able to be flexible and customizable as well would be such a great help, especially for people that have that issues.
Yeah. Example, one guy who worked for us actually a couple of years ago, he was very health conscious. He'd read a lot of different books on diet and nutrition and was kind of picky about what he would eat. And for example, he wouldn't eat spinach because he felt that the oxalates in spinach were toxic, essentially. Just another example of people being choosy about what vegetables they eat, right?
Yeah.
That's absolutely what I love about this new generation that we're waking up into. Very particular on what they're eating, where it's coming from. And I've read your bio, and your farm also practice inspired by permaculture, little till. And I think that's beautiful. If there's any way this could be scale in hobby farm or even in garden homes, which you are heavily advocating for, can you talk to us about what this would help us when it comes to sustainable farming? Canadians would know more about it. And please do. Adam would be the best person to talk to us about this. Can you please enlighten us for those listeners that have little information of what permaculture and how is this have helped your farm this year?
Permaculture was a term coined by an Australian ecologist in the 1970s. It kind of means permanent agriculture, but also permanent culture. It's trying to design farms and gardens, but also kind of human settlements to be more sustainable and to try to mimic natural ecosystems, so to learn from nature. One way that permaculture can be applied is, say, for example, instead of having an orchard that's a monoculture, you have an orchard that looks more like a forest. So you have tall trees, mid-sized trees, shrubs, vines, ground covers. So The way a permaculture orchard or food forest would look is nut trees, fruit trees, berries, crops like rhubarb or asparagus growing under the trees in the shade. The way that we're kind of doing it is we've planted rows of fruit trees and nut trees in strips, and then we're growing vegetables between the rows of trees. We have blocks of the field that are, our beds are 100 feet long, and the blocks can be 50 feet to 100 feet wide. And rows of trees that are still young, we're not yet harvesting too many fruits, like not enough for sale. But, you know, the rows of fruit trees create a windbreak. They slow down wind. Around the trees, we have things like different flowers, like wildflowers, perennial flowers, and herbs. That's bringing in beneficial insects and pollinators. So that's helping support the crops. Like, we have a wildflower that attracts predatory wasps, and those wasps basically attack the caterpillars. That actually solves a pest problem for us. Another thing,
definitely less pesticides and less, you know.
Yeah. I mean, in our case, we don't use any pesticides anyways, but yeah, if we did, it would reduce our need for pesticides. Or one thing too, by having areas of a garden or a farm where the soil is intact and never being tilled, that helps the soil fungus thrive. And then that soil fungus will kind of spread outwards into other areas and help the other plants thrive better, basically. So permaculture works really well on a small scale. It works really well for a human scale where you're doing a lot of work by hand. Doesn't work as well for a large scale agriculture with tractors. But even then, I mean, there are big scale farms that will do what's called alley cropping, where, yeah, they'll have rows of trees and then areas between the rows of trees that they could run a tractor or other machinery. But it's more of a diverse ecosystem with many different crops. It's harder to scale. It's much more suitable for small scale agriculture like us, and especially for home gardeners. So in a home garden context, that could look like, let's say you have your typical backyard. You might have some trees around the edges and then maybe a sunny area in the middle where you're growing things like tomatoes or crops that need full sun. But then in the part shade areas near the trees, you could be growing different herbs or different flowers or even some vegetable crops, like a lot of leafy greens can handle part sun. Yeah, so one benefit is you can grow a lot more food in a small area. Rather than have a fruit tree with nothing under it, you could have strawberries and rhubarb and chives and oregano and different perennial crops underneath in the part shade that can handle the part shade.
For someone who's accustomed to supermarket produce, what do you think is the most noticeable difference in taste and quality when they switch to the freshly harvested and in-season vegetable and fruit?
I think the biggest thing about quality is the freshness, meaning it lasts longer. I regularly have customers at the market compliment me on how long the vegetables last in their fridge. They're always sometimes people are quite surprised by it. And I mean, I can't speak for every farm that goes to a market, but in our case, when we sell a salad mix or a head of lettuce or kale or something like that at market, typically we've harvested on a Friday for the Saturday market. So it's really, the only way it could be more fresh is if you grew it in your backyard, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas when you go to the supermarket, it might be a week old by the time you get it, you know? I think that's one of the biggest variables for quality. As far as taste, I mean, I don't want to claim that our stuff necessarily tastes better, even though I hear that from customers. I don't want to make that claim. I think that has more to do with soil health and the minerals in the soil, which isn't necessarily like a big farm or a small farm could have that benefit. Yeah, that has to do with what you're putting into the soil and even where the farm is, like what the subsoil content is.
I mean, thank you for that, Adam. I would echo that keyword you said about nutrients, the micronutrients, you know, the bugs under there, all of those ecosystem under the soil that's giving the richness of taste and quality of the produce that's coming from our local farmers. I think that's the missing link. But I can tell you from a perspective of a buyer or consumer, there is really a sense that the taste is different and the quality wise. It lasts longer, like you mentioned, the taste and the texture, it's really there. You can taste it. And when I buy produce in the supermarket, I have to be able to consume it in a week. Otherwise, it's going to go rotten. And my husband would always tell me, like, what are you doing? You're going to make sure you check the fridge. I always thought it's fresh. I always thought your egg's going to last us 2 weeks, but it didn't. One of the things that we've loved to discuss on this podcast is really incorporating kids into the conversation and how we are able to influence our kids to be snacking on veggies instead of, you know, chips and the easy fries that we always get on drive-through. Understanding where the food comes from, I think, is very important. Would you have some insights for me also as a mom? I'm a struggling mom on lunchbox. Try to incorporate vegetables into the lunchbox, but you probably have something better tips for me on that.
I mean, I have the same struggle. This time of year, we put carrots in our kids' lunches every day, and sometimes they come back. So I'm not speaking from a place of perfection or anything. I would say the biggest thing I've seen is when young kids grow up with a garden at home, I think that really changes their relationship and their habits. We saw it with our own kids who are now they're 9 and 12, a little bit older, but we saw it when they were younger that even now to some extent, but like if they're outside in the garden, they're very likely to just pick things off the plants and eat them. Say kale. We could make a kale salad, you know, nice massaged kale salad with olive oil and other, we could put different things in it and put it on a plate. They're not very excited about that. But, you know, they come out in the field and they'll just walking past the kale plants, they'll just pick it and eat it.
Having them involved in the process. Is that what you're saying? Like, get them out there. Okay.
Gotcha. And I've heard this from multiple customers at market, people who, this was the first year they planted a garden. Say they planted some cherry tomatoes and kale and lettuce and cucumbers, whatever, a few simple crops, multiple times where they say that my kid won't eat this vegetable if I make something out of it and put it on their plate at the table, but out in the garden, they'll snack on it. Even something like onions. My kids will eat just like the leaves off onion plants or chives in the garden. Again, they're not as excited if it's in a recipe on the table, but they're much more excited out in the garden. One other thing I'll add, I see it too at the farmer's market. Parents will bring their kids and the kids will be like, I want that. They'll point out a vegetable that they don't, something weird, like not weird, but like something less common, like kohlrabi or a type of squash that the kids will just be excited because it looks cool. And they're like, you know, mom, dad, can we buy this? And it's like, okay, well, if we're buying this, you better eat it. And because the kid has some control and influence over the situation, they're more likely to follow through and, oh yeah, okay, I'll eat this. Or just also with when we have interesting crops like carrots, we don't just grow standard orange carrots. We grow different colors of carrots. Kids will come and get excited. Oh, look, these carrots are purple. Let's get them. Or like, oh, these tomatoes are yellow. Let's get these ones. And by them having some choice in the matter, I think that makes a big difference.
I'm curious, like for someone who's new to the farmers market, what questions should they ask to make sure that they are getting the best choice they have?
A big one is recipes. People asking, how do I eat this? Kohlrabi is a good example. That's a vegetable it's in the cabbage. It's the same species as cabbage and broccoli and kale. It's this kind of round, you know, looks like a bulb or a root vegetable, but it actually grows above the ground. Lots of people come to market and they're like, oh, what's that? That looks so weird. What is it? How do I eat it? And just having that conversation of, oh, here's multiple ways you could eat this. People, then they're curious. They're willing to be creative. They're willing to try something. So I think that's probably the biggest thing is telling people how to eat something. You know, some recipe suggestions.
Thank you for sharing me that. Like, I'm new to the farmer's market, so definitely, like, next time when I go and pick up some fresh fruit or fresh vegetable, I'll definitely try and ask.
Yes, we are to the end of our episode for this podcast. In wrapping up, we want to leave some inspiration to our listeners. What are we going to do to inspire our next generation or even our current generation to be able to live a healthier life, look into making their own garden, and be able to connect life again through food?
Maybe it's not for everyone, and not everyone has a yard or a balcony or something, but I think many people would benefit from gardening, even if it's not growing a significant amount of their own food, just to have that connection to nature and to plants. To add to that, learn your weeds, you know, so-called weeds, plants that grow themselves. A lot of weeds are food and a lot of them are medicinal. So that's one thing people will look at their garden after they've tilled it and think, oh, what are all these plants popping up here? And for example, one common weed in gardens, one common one is lamb's quarters. One common name for it is wild spinach, because it is a green that you can eat it fresh in a salad when it's really young, or when it's a little bit bigger, it's a cooking green. But there's, like, if you go to South Asia, like India, Pakistan, Nepal, it's one of the most commonly cooked vegetables. They call it, in Hindi, it's batwa, sag batwa. Sag meaning cooking green. A lot of people, if they've gone to an Indian restaurant, they've probably had sag paneer. So sag is not just like spinach, but it's like other greens also that can be cooked in a curry or a stew or a stir fry. This past summer, we had some people working for us who were from Nepal, and every day at the end of their shift, they would go back out to the field to harvest the lamb's quarters to take it home to cook it, to eat it. And I've brought it to market too. I've cooked with it. It's delicious. It's very nutritious. It's also basically wild quinoa. When it gets to a full size and produces its seeds, it creates these little black seeds that are a high protein content wild quinoa. So
wow, that's amazing. Like, I've learned a lot in this conversation. You too, Allison?
Yeah.
Can you please tell us what's next for Branching Path Farm? Any exciting projects or crops that are in your horizon, and what are we looking forward to 2025?
We're planning to mostly stay the course. This past year, we were just at the Ottawa Street Market and selling on farm. We're planning to do the same for next year. This past year, we still grew, I think, 40 different vegetable crops. So we're going to keep going with that. Eventually, we're going to have some other crops like berries and fruits and asparagus and rhubarb. The main new thing for us, too, is that I'm trying to do more workshops and more consulting. Keep an eye on our social media or our website in the next couple months. We'll be listing kind of what we're offering there.
All right, thank you so much for tuning in for today's episode, and we're happy to have Adam from Branching Path Farm. We are so excited to hear from you as well. What are your experiences regarding having a garden at home? If you have any questions and how to reach out to Adam, we'll make sure to leave his information in our episode. Thank you so much, and see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam.